Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the numeral 4-KIDS.
Mike Florio. Let's bring in Mike Florio here. Joins us on the program.
NBC Sports.
All right, Florio, I know you're probably busy.
Pro Football Talk.
Starts the day, he ends the day with Pro Football Talk. He is Mike Florio.
Within moments, a long national nightmare is apparently coming to an end.
I don't know what you're talking about.
If Justin Fields can't beat out Andy Dalton, what the hell were they doing trading up from 20 to 11 to get it?
Go to hell with your big brain, ladies and gentlemen. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi.
How are you, Mike?
On The Score.
Always fun times in the NFL. So to talk Bears and NFL, here's Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk, NFL analyst on NBC. He is Pro Football Talk. He is with us on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Mike. What's good in your world?
A slow, boring week where I just wonder what I'm going to be writing about, what I'm going to be talking about, what I'm going to be thinking about. It's just one of those weeks where you just sit around and wait for something to happen.
Well, my thought now is this. We know that there's more to be told in this trove of emails. We know that there is far more in the investigation of the Washington football team. We know that the union wants it made public. We know that there are others who are like filing amicus briefs to get this thing made public. What's next?
That's an excellent question, because I really don't know. I hope that enough pressure will be placed on the NFL to release more of the materials that currently are in this 650,000 document sarcophagus into which they dipped selectively. That's what petrifies me about this. Not for my own purposes, because I didn't email Bruce Allen, and if I did, I wouldn't have been stupid enough or poisonous enough to say some of the things that got John Gruden in a position where he is. It petrifies me from the standpoint of someone has an enormous amount of power over anyone and everyone who could be implicated as seriously as Gruden, or to a lesser extent, or through an argument that it really means something that wasn't said, whatever it may be. Whoever is in that chain of emails, or who communicated with Bruce Allen, or with others who worked for the Washington football team, or others who worked for, or you know, anyone whose emails are in that, they can be the next one that gets targeted for what Gruden was targeted for. Because somebody targeted him for that.
Yeah,
somebody
why?
Decided...
Why? Why? Who
know.
And why?
Well, okay, there's different explanations. One is they just don't like the guy. He's a constant irritant. He's constantly complaining about something. He's constantly mad about something that the league is trying to do to make the game better and advance the sport. Or maybe the commissioner just didn't like the fact that Gruden took him on personally. I think it may have started as it relates to the leaks that came out last week. It was an effort, I believe, based upon the people I've talked to save the job of Demoris Smith, because that one email hits 2 hours before Demoris Smith faces a vote on his future, and they don't want a new executive director. They don't want to have to deal with a new personality who may come in and decide, let's blow everything up. Let's be hostile. Let's be aggressive. Let's not make deals. Let's not have peace. So they helped Demoris Smith, but at some point it became more than that. It became, we have to take down John Gruden. And my concern is that unless we release all this stuff now and put it all out on the table now, someone has the power to do that to someone else. And next time around, you don't even have to leak the emails. You can just take the emails directly to the person and say, you saw what happened to Gruden. You know, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. And I hate to be that cynical, but someone has that power. And, you know, we say all the time, boy, that would be something if it falls into the wrong hands. It already is in the wrong hands because it's already happened. 650,000 documents that were supposedly going to be kept confidential aren't, as it relates to John Gruden. So what else is out there? Is John Gruden the worst of the worst? Or is the John Gruden communication, is that common? How widespread is it? We don't know unless we see it all. I hope that somehow, some way, we can get access to more of these. It's fair, it's appropriate, and it eliminates that power that they could have to pull out their enemies list and say, let's see, or let's cross-reference it. Any of our enemies caught up in this, we can go after them one at a time over the course of the next 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, however long they want to play it out.
Yeah, I think there's multiple levels of, I don't know that corruption is the right word, but perhaps rotting here. Because, yes, what John Gruden did was really bad. Yes, what Adam Schefter did was also really bad. But both of them are taking hits in the Daniel Snyder investigation. And Bruce Allen hasn't gotten hit yet. And it seems like it's kind of like in a coaching metaphor when you fire the defensive coordinator because you know you're next. That's what happens. Everybody else below you goes before you go, but you still go. The difference is in this case, time being bought is so valuable. And you know that as an attorney, Mike. The longer guys have time at the top to plan, the better, while everybody else is distracted with also these bad things.
Well, that's right. But you know what? I heard a lot yesterday of people saying folks throughout the league are scrubbing their emails right now. Well, there's some people who can do any amount of scrubbing they want, and the stain's not coming off. Their emails are already in that trove of 650,000 documents. And we just don't know. We don't know where the rabbit hole leads. We don't know how dark and deep it is. Was Gruden the outlier? Does everybody behave like this? The truth has got to be somewhere in the middle, but we won't know until we see it all. One point I've been making is with the Packers, because they're publicly owned, we get a glimpse every year, a 1/32nd slice of the financial picture of the NFL that allows us to get an idea of how the NFL is doing. This would be a perfect 1/32nd slice. Now, it may not be representative because of all the issues that we know about and the allegations that we've heard about the Washington football team, but as it relates to day in and day out communications, you know, we'd have an idea of how it really works. And I think that it's important. I'm curious. I want to know. I want to see. I want to know how many people behave like this, how many people do, how many people don't. The problem is there's just no mechanism to do it. But the way the NFL has phrased some of their statements, we don't currently plan to release anything. We don't intend to release anything. Now, hopefully that's not a precursor for we reserve the right to go after anyone else we want to go after. Hopefully that means that under the right circumstances, they will just say, you know what, it's in the public's interest. We need to go ahead and do this. We need to be fair to the story. I hope that at some point they will. And one way to make that happen is for fans and media to keep banging the door, keep putting the pressure on them. And I will not relent. I'm not going to forget about it. I'm going to keep on this because I don't like that someone has the power to selectively end careers with a handful of emails here and there that are pulled out of that 650,000 document sarcophagus and handed to employers or just passed over the desk to the person that they want to see walk away.
We came out of that game as Bears observers thinking, hey, that's a hell of a win. Look at that. They went on the road and they're 5-point dogs and they whipped them physically. They imposed their will and all these other cliches. And now we have to look back at that just to be completely honest about it and wonder if the Raiders were all there and wonder if it had John Gruden been in meetings with lawyers instead of watching game tape and with everything that was bubbling around that team and how that affects preparation, how it affects everybody's families and all of it. It had to have mattered, right?
Absolutely, and Gruden had to have been thinking very seriously about where this was going to lead. He knew what his How would you not know? How would you not remember when it's a pattern that seemed to be that extensive? He knew what he said to Bruce Allen in those settings, and how did he not realize that it wasn't the end of it? You know, the metaphor I've been using all week, because I haven't thought of anything better than that, is that his boat got hit by a torpedo, and he tried to repair the damage instead of abandon ship when he knew that there were other torpedoes already in the water. He knew. And I think the NFL, because I believe the NFL not only initiated this, it's obvious the NFL initiated this by selecting the emails and sending them to the Raiders. I think the NFL leaked select emails to the media to create external pressure. I think more and more and more of these would have been leaked until Gruden either quit or Mark Davis fired him. And I think once the New York Times story hit Monday night, well, I don't think I know, that was the fuse, the final fuse that led to the John Gruden resignation bomb. And I think he got out before there would have been more. If he would have gotten out before Monday night, the ones that we saw Monday night, we never would have seen.
I also am interested in the fact that people had to fight to be spoken up for as far as the women who their images were shared in these emails that were used against them. And maybe when the truth comes out about all of this, it's because of a court case involving them, the victims, because I don't know how much water is being carried for everyone else who's in a position of power here. What were your thoughts on just that piece of this when it comes to the legality?
Well, and that's a great point, because currently there is no legal mechanism in place for these documents to be made available. We know about the Schefter sliver of it because the issue came up in a fight between Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen over this defamation case that Snyder filed in India, and he's been going from jurisdiction to jurisdiction trying to get discovery here in the United States, and Bruce Allen claimed he never serves as a source, and that's how this email got put into evidence in order to prove that he does serve as a source. So unless there's some other litigation for which these documents would be relevant, they're not going to see the light of day. And even then, they may be sealed until there would be a trial. But until someone who worked for the Washington Football Team sues Daniel Snyder or the organization, until there's some other legal mechanism. And, you know, I've been kicking around the idea, and I don't have the time, the desire, or the resources to fully research this. To the extent that NFL teams play in publicly funded venues, I just wonder if there's a way in one of the states where the NFL has a team to argue that the NFL team falls under the Freedom of Information Act and all emails to and from the Bears.com or Vikings.com or 49ers.com email domain are as public as they are for a public entity. That would be a very aggressive argument. Maybe there's some loophole out there. Maybe there's some crack that could be exploited. But that would be a way to do it. There aren't many other ways to do it unless and until someone sues the Washington Football Team, or if Gruden would file a lawsuit and say, I want to see all these documents and I want to figure out why I was the one who was targeted for the selective leak of something that you claimed was confidential.
It would have to be something related to like the Packers that they're public. But FOIA, I think, is only for government-related
Oh, I know. It is. But my point is, with public funding of a stadium, that's where I think it becomes potentially, with enough public funding, depending upon how the laws are written in a given state, maybe there's an aggressive interpretation that could be pushed. But that would be it. And I think even then it would be an uphill battle.
I'm curious your reaction to a wonderful column that was written by the always perceptive Michael Rosenberg over at Sports Illustrated. And this was before the second document dump of John Gruden's emails. This was just the first one, the Damaris Smith stuff. And he compared and contrasted Urban Meyer in his situation and Gruden, making the case of the folly of the savior myth. And how easily owners are intoxicated by the idea of this grand savior. Give him keys to the kingdom, give him everything, and make him the most powerful person in the organization. Essentially saying, you ask for this. You ask for a lack of accountability. You ask for somebody to feel like they're bulletproof, when instead somebody like Sean Payton or John Harbaugh or even Andy Reid, when you're just hiring a coach, it changes the dynamic, and it does allow for what all coaches always talk about, the idea of accountability.
Well, I think you're right. But look, I think the more fundamental reality, and I, I love this aspect of the business. You've got multi-billion dollar organizations. You've got very intricate and detailed football operations. And ultimately, they are owned by someone who made a bunch of money in some other line of business and decided to buy a football team and thinks they can figure it out, or someone who inherited such a business from a parent who has died, or a sibling who has died, or a spouse who has died. These people don't know what they're doing. And a lot of times, what we in the media do by way of promoting or not promoting candidates is directly relevant to who gets hired and who doesn't, because the owners don't know what to do. And they're not going to go to their business partners, their peers, and expose their ignorance and say, I really don't know what to do here. So they get as smitten as a fan would get smitten, and they don't know what questions to ask. Now, a lot of these owners who have analytics experts are arming themselves with more pointed questions that get asked about football strategy and whatnot. But when it comes to hiring the right individual to run a team, they just don't know what to do. I'm told that Shad Khan was smitten with Urban Meyer for a decade before he got him. And we know how badly Mark Davis wanted John Gruden. And when you go back and look at John Gruden's coaching record, it's like, especially when you throw in the last 3 years and 5 weeks, it's really meh. And the same way fans get caught up in certain names, owners do the same thing, because they're viewing the sport through the same prism that the fans are, watching it on TV, reading about it on their phones, listening to talk shows and podcasts, and that's how they come to their conclusions about who is quote-unquote a good coach and who isn't.
All right, so let's get fan real quick for a minute, Mike. It is Bears-Packers week, and we've gone 17 minutes in this interview without asking a question about it. So what are your thoughts on the competitive nature of the game, given the at least resilience of Chicago's run game, and unfortunately, the resilience of Aaron Rodgers?
Isn't it amazing that the Bears are 3-2?
Yes.
Does it not feel like the Bears are 1-4? And maybe they're the best 3-2 team that's, or the worst, excuse me, the worst 3-2 team that's ever played. But they're still 3-2. They're all alone in second place in the division. And if they win this game, they catch the Packers and technically take over first place. It's amazing. And it's not going to be easy. The Packers have gotten a lot better from that disaster we saw week one. The defense has settled down. The offense is what it's always been. Aaron Rodgers is who he was. Matt LaFleur, I think, is underappreciated as a great head coach who is now 30-7 in the regular season, which is pretty damn good. So, this isn't going to be easy for the Bears. But, you know, if every team either gets better or gets worse during the course of the season, and there are moments where you either rise up or you don't. And this is a great opportunity for the Bears to rise up. I don't know that I expect it. I agree with what you said earlier about the win over the Raiders, maybe not as impressive in hindsight when you consider the turmoil the organization was experiencing. But this would be a great opportunity for the Bears to get to 4-2 and have a bunch of people thinking, wait a minute, is that a misprint? That's 2-4, right? They got it flipped around. This team can't be 4-2.
Mike Florio, thanks. Have a great week.
All right, see you.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Next up, Cody Decker has strong baseball thoughts. He is coming your way. And Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, I'm fired up baseball guy.
I wish more guys pissed me off when I played.
Cody Decker.
Hey, Cody, why do you not like the Brewers?
Trash organization. The launch angle craze is absolute madness.
Outfielder Cody Decker.
If you don't take advantage of the data, then don't play this game.
Swing and a drive, hit the deep left center. That ball's headed for the wall. It is gone! It's gone! Cody Decker with a game-winning 2-run home run.
Baseball analyst Cody Decker.
The Commissioner of Baseball is not quite the job it once was. The job used to be to safeguard the game, and on paper, that is still what it is. Grow and safeguard the game. But really, nowadays, the commissioner's job is more or less a union head chief for the owners, unfortunately. And that's just kind of the system that it's grown into. And I do think it needs to get away from that. And I think Theo Epstein would be a perfect guy to do that because, yeah, he does see some things on the side of the players, but he also sees things on the side of ownership. He's been working on the ownership side for the past 20 years. So I think he would be a decent fit if your goal is to bring players and ownership together.
Cody Decker with Bernstein and Rahimi
on The Score.
Cody Decker's on Twitter at Decker6. The Score baseball analyst and host of Down the Line with Cody Decker is on the Score hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He is also joining us on Twitch. So before we get into the baseball stuff, Cody, how were the guys? How was it hanging with Danny and Spiegs and Shane and Mitch and the Score crew?
We had one hell of a time over at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, so much so that my voice is still a little hoarse, but I'm still just as fired up as I ever was. We had a great time. Got to do a lot of hits, do a lot of fun stuff, hung out at the sports book, three-story indoor sports book, of course, Stadium Swim, watched a ton of sports. It was a live and electric weekend.
Yeah, we creeped some of the Instagram story posts, and it seems like they're not saying much, Cody.
Well, here's what I will tell you. I went to a bare naked ladies concert. Yes, I said that out loud. And I didn't realize how great that concert was. I didn't see them there. I don't know what they were up to most of this weekend. Really, honestly, don't ask me that question.
Because that's the thing, too, because like Instagram Shane and social media Shane can be sort of a construct that isn't necessarily real, for better or for worse. We don't know where one ends and the other begins. So we have to get some of the backstory at some point.
Amazingly, it was more well-tamed than you might think. It was just a lot of people, a lot of sports fans. Chicago came out in droves for the Raiders-Bears game, and it was awesome. It was just really an incredible time. I can't thank Circa enough. I can't thank 670 The Score enough. All the guys over at Parkins and Spiegel. I mean, it was a great weekend.
Yeah, I was laughing because one of the videos I saw from Arash Markazi, the reporter, was a bunch of people, Raiders and Bears fans, all leaving the stadium chanting, "Packers suck." I love that unites everybody this week.
It was really a fun time. And man, Bears, huh? Let's go.
Yep. We don't know if the Raiders were all there, considering everything
they
was
weren't.
Going on.
Oh, they weren't.
No.
They were nowhere near there. It was embarrassing. It was honestly, it was one of the more painful Raider fandom weekends of my entire life.
All right, we put off talking about the White Sox long enough. What was the most glaring issue that stood out to you?
Pitching. The pitching was not good. The bullpen was not good. The bats did not come alive. Quite frankly, they just didn't look good this series. And that's not a more of a thing about how the White Sox are good or bad. I'm seeing a lot of people on Twitter going, "White Sox suck." No, they do not. When it comes to October, it's just about who is hot. And honest to God, the way the Astros were playing, they were hot and they look really, really good. That Red Sox-Astros series is going to be quite good. But I do think there are some glaring issues issues that need to be handled. Right now, the White Sox are still young. They can still grow into a championship caliber team as soon as next season. You know, two playoff appearances in a row with that young crew, I do think they can maybe extend some bullpen arms. You know, Kopech's going to come into his own. I think this team is going in the right direction. I really do. I'm not as concerned as other people in the city are. I mean, it's the playoffs. Anything can happen.
It was still so reminiscent when we realized that it's been a year. You know, the earth has gone around for 365 days, and we're saying the same things, Cody. It was last year. It's like, well, we can't let this happen again. We're going to get a new manager. We're going to get smarter. We know that these bites at the apple are precious, and we're going to take them seriously and tighten everything up around the edges to give us that chance. And they got dumber. That's what really sucks, is you watch the Astros have an approach at the plate. You watch the Astros use positioning to be more likely to record outs. And what really stings is the White Sox just didn't tighten anything up. They still couldn't hit cutoff men. They still fell for pitchers' pitches, and they still didn't care to put people in the best chance to succeed defensively. That's what really stings, is they said they were going to do one thing, and they did a different thing.
You know, it was one of those games. I think they looked at some matchups that they really liked, and it just didn't work out. And once the lead was really broken open off of Kopech, the game was pretty much out of reach. And obviously, that 3-run home run by Altuve was the thing that threw the final nail in the coffin. But it was a tough watch. Honestly, they didn't look all that motivated in that game. The game before, they played with their hair on fire. This game, you know, it was one of those games. It's not that the team was bad or that the team is going in any wrong direction. It was just the way that season ended is going to leave a bad taste in every White Sox fan's mouth for at least 3 months. And that's just the way it is. And hopefully they can make some adjustments this offseason, possibly, most likely based on what I just saw this last couple of months. I doubt they're going to send anything towards Kimbrel. And, you know, they're going to start using their younger arms in the bullpen.
You know, Bob Nightingale just tweeted a little while ago that the White Sox will pick up Kimbrel's option and then trade him this winter. How can they do that if any trade partner would know that he doesn't really have a role with the White Sox?
I don't know. It seems like a not the smartest move. Well, not the smartest move. When you have Craig Kimbrel, you have a great trade piece, plain and simple. But it's a matter of whether or not they're going to get much return for him, considering the fact that he doesn't have his normal role on the White Sox. And you just saw it being taken out of his closer role, being moved over to the White Sox into a setup role, didn't really work for him. He needs to be back in that closer setup. And I think a team will definitely jump on him, but I'm not sure the market's going to be glaring for him in the offseason.
Here's my concern, though, is what we saw in that series exposed every concern that we had about the White Sox almost to a blueprint. It was the lack of defensive shifts. It was the starting pitching getting spoiled. It was the fact that you couldn't have one of your major free agents that you signed 2 years ago on the playoff roster anyway. It was the singles that took place in games 1 and 2 and nothing else. You had to wait until game 3 for the extra base hits. So, to me, they might be headed in the right direction, and I still think that is the case, but are they going to get there quick enough to even just get out of the DS?
Yes, I do think they can do that immediately. I think they could have gotten out of this series. I mean, there were other massive issues during this series. One, they did a terrible job of controlling the run game. Mm-hmm. I got to take a look at some leg times because I'm assuming some leg times are really slow, not even giving Yasmani even a chance to throw anybody out. It was just a series where they just... they didn't look like they had it. That was all that you could say about it. They didn't look sharp. Where the Astros looked more than willing and ready to go, I think they were. I think the White Sox, dugout might have been feeling themselves after that first home game. A couple of comments thrown into the Twitter sphere towards the Astros, and last thing you need to do is give the Houston Astros any motivation whatsoever. That team knows what they're doing with Dusty Baker at the helm.
We looked at the Astros' approach and being able to foul off so many pitchers' pitches to get them in advantageous situations to go hunt for something in a quadrant of the strike zone. And I'm always curious, is this nature or nurture? Can those abilities be taught and learned, or is that something either you have or you don't?
You can be taught and learn that. If you're a Major League Baseball player, you can make adjustments and change your portion of the game. And that is definitely something they do over at the Houston Astros right now. It used to be the Astros were all about, you know, just drive the ball deep. A great example of this would be Kyle Tucker. Look at his...
Oh, is he good?
Look at his career, though. He went from coming up and just being a strikeout or homer guy, and now he's putting up quality at bats and still having the power to change games with his homers. It's a matter of changing approaches, adjusting to approaches, and not, you know, digging into one full-on approach. That's the way the game is played. There's not a single guy on that team, the White Sox, that aren't capable of this. But keep in mind, I understand why everybody in Chicago is so freaking out about the White Sox losing, but look down at Tampa. They were the best team in the American League, and they're at home at the same time as the White Sox.
They were the best team at the American League at the end, but the Red Sox, for the first 2 to 3 months, really put everybody on notice. And that's what I get back to. And it's interesting that we bring up the Sox, too, because of what they've gone through. For all the clamoring here about A.J. Hinch and the reasons behind it, there's still a huge faction of people who say, well, you don't want A.J. because of his history. Well, everybody else is in the game right now except for Beltran. And look what Alex Cora and his team are doing. Look how they won. Look who they beat. They have to be the favorites to me in the CS now.
Yeah, I think they are. But also, you know, you mentioned the punishment and we didn't want A.J. Hinch here because of this or that. Listen, there was no punishment to any of the players. So the fact that, you know, you could say whatever you want about A.J. Hinch, but I think we can all agree he was a pretty heavy scapegoat. And he's over there doing a really good job in Detroit, so much so that I'm actually worried about Detroit over the next couple of years. They just absolutely improved. I have a feeling they are planning on grooming somebody that's already in-house to become the next manager of the team. That would make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, I do think this team is in much better shape than we're all. I think today just everything feels very raw.
I think it's fair. And we're angry today because of how they went out, and it was
it was brutal.
And the fact that the manager is then, for some reason, like jousting at windmills, bitching about them hitting Jose Abreu. First of all, it didn't look intentional to me. And second of all, your season's over, Jack. I mean, what are you doing? Why are you? What do you care? They just ousted you for the playoffs, and you're going on some sort of crusade against their ethics because you think they hit a guy? It's like, you don't have another game here. You're not trying to show your players you have their backs. I don't know what that all was.
I don't know, but I will tell you this. There's a stark contrast between that reaction to the ending of the season and the Blue Jays' reaction to the ending of the season. Because Ross Stripling, pitcher for the Blue Jays, did a really good interview where he's talking about the last game of the season where they just missed out on playoffs because the Red Sox ended up winning their final game. He said that they got pulled in the the clubhouse, and he just said, Montoya looked at us all and said, guys, I'm proud of every single one of you. You fought till the very end. We had a crazy year. But this team is young and great. And look at you guys. We're going to be winning for the next couple of years. Get ready for this offseason. Never forget this feeling. Let's do it again next year. And we didn't get that from Tony La Russa. Maybe he had that behind closed doors with his team, but the first thing he comes out saying is, like, I can't believe they threw at Abreu.
Yeah.
Dude, you just got knocked out.
Thank you.
Losing by 9 runs at home. Can you please put things in perspective today?
Yes, I understand he was probably frustrated and decided to take it out on people. And I wonder if that's like just a nod to old school, how he's always managed, like thinks that stuff is going to earn him some capital next year. That was kind of I think it is like an umpiring issue. Like you've got to be consistent toward umpires or something. I'm just trying to put myself into his shoes with that thought process there when that game was already so well in hand.
Yeah, it did leave a bad taste in my mouth as well. But, you know, maybe there's a method to the madness that I just can't see and no one else can see. But, you know, you see the comments from some of the players. They seem to have loved to play for him this year, and I'm sure they're going to love to play for him next year. This is a team that's going to be just fine. I just want to remind everybody, yesterday sucked. It was awful. It was painful to watch. It was a terrible, terribly ran baseball game. It was a terribly played baseball game. That doesn't mean they're a terrible team. They're going to be perfectly fine, and they're going to win their division next year. And when it comes to October, it's anyone's ball game.
Before we let you go, Mitch Rosen mentioned that the two of you had dinner in Las Vegas, and I'm looking at the menu of Carson Kitchen right now.
Oh no, we're gonna lose Dan.
Yeah, do you remember in the movie Diner, the guy who would order like the entire left side of the menu and then the entire right side of the menu? I'm looking at it. I'm nodding my head at absolutely every one of these things.
It is one of the best restaurants in Las Vegas. It's off the beaten path. It is unbelievable. Basically, Mitch looked at me. He's like, let's go to dinner. I'm like, okay, there's Barry's downstairs. Really nice steakhouse. So we're starting to walk down there. And I'm like, we can go to Carson Kitchen. It's off the beaten path. We went there. And he's like, he was so happy we went to this place because it is my favorite restaurant, not only in Vegas, maybe on Earth.
Really? I mean, veal meatballs with sherry foie gras cream, deviled eggs with crispy pancetta and caviar. Dude, I mean, let's have a night.
We lost him.
And I don't want to be that guy to bring it up again, but that is walking distance to Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sports book.
And a swimming pool that has a temperature outside that is swimming pool appropriate, which we don't have anymore here in town. I hate
that
everyone.
Is true. Not only that, the actual pool itself is like heated to 80 degrees. It was amazing.
80 degrees? Oh, geez, man. Jeez. I'm glad awesome. You kids had fun.
Cody, thank you.
We did.
You. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Cody.
Love you guys.
That's Cody Decker. And next up, we have the Midday Midway. I have a radio mystery.
I, too, have a mystery.
Dueling Mysteries, next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Midday Midway Wednesday means the middle of your week, so welcome to it. All downhill from here, we talked about the White Sox at length. Listen to some of the things that AJ Pierzynski said that, as we mentioned, it's almost like he was in the middle of our group text. yesterday and first guessing some stuff. Mike Florio talked football, John Gruden, the Bears, Packers, all of it. Cody Decker just weighed in and brings us here.
All right, whose mystery goes first?
Go ahead.
Apparently, someone spread somebody's ashes at Heinz Field during a Steelers game on Sunday. Yeah, I told you, mystery. And that brings us to a lot of questions here, because how on earth did, during the Steelers' 27-19 win over the Broncos, did ashes get put onto the field? When you have that much security at an NFL stadium, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I love how it's also being reported.
Is it a crime? Is that like a
yes.
Is it littering?
In the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, ashes are not permitted to be spread anywhere without the property owner's permission. The property owners being they who have the Steelers. And maybe it's a publicly funded stadium. But yes, they were reportedly spread in the south end zone. And they had to have a statement. And the statement is from their spokesperson, Bert Lawton. Quote, an incident occurred during the game at Heinz Field on Sunday where a fan was spreading ashes of a deceased family member in the stadium. So I guess they had like a front row ticket or something and were able to like go down there and then empty. Heinz Field management does not permit or condone such actions. While we respect those fans who may be interested in honoring a family member by spreading their family's ashes inside the stadium, Heinz Field cannot accommodate those requests due to state and local regulations. I am very impressed that the Pittsburgh media found the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania laws about ashes and land. We have responded to the communications from our fans throughout the years that this type of action is not permissible because it happens a lot.
Apparently.
Steelers fans are very dedicated.
Well, my wife and I both have sort of a standing rule about preferring cremation. And she said, well, where do you want your ashes scattered? And I said, well, I think they should go where I'm the happiest and most at peace.
The bakery section of Dale Goods at Mariano's?
The bathroom.
Oh.
Just scatter them in the bathroom.
Man.
I just said, really, if you want, she said, well, what's your happy place? I said, you know my happy place. She's like, no, I don't. Like, yeah, you do. She said, what, at a lake in Canada? Like, no, right over there. Just, you know, set a crossword puzzle down and, you know, pour one out for them. You know, it's not that hard. We don't have to overthink this.
Well, the reporters in Pittsburgh decided to talk to a local funeral director about it for some advice because they are good reporters. And here was the quote that Bob Neely, the director of Neely Funeral Home, gave. Quote, private property should not have cremated remains scattered there. You should choose a place where you own the property to inter them where they're not going to be found. But just scattering them out in public is not a good idea. Once cremated remains are delivered, that is considered final disposition. And unless they are then buried, they are not tracked. So they're heated up to a point where there is no disease left. There's nothing there. You just have fine particles. But if you don't know what they are, you probably aren't going to be able to tell whenever they get to you. But you have a fairly good amount that one can come out of an urn.
Who's tracking them?
I don't know, but I found all of this really thorough. Like, I knew that they had good reporters and good stations in Pittsburgh, but I didn't know that we were going to get so much other bonus info about this.
Speaking of which, astronomers have detected mysterious radio waves coming from the center of the Milky Way.
Oh, yeah. This weirded me out. I read it last night.
So far, they have no idea what's causing it. According to a new study published Tuesday in the Astrophysical Journal, a team of scientists from across the world discovered the object using the CSIRO radio telescope in Western Australia. Zitang Wang, the lead author of the study and a PhD student at the University of Sydney, said in a press release they initially believed it could be a spinning dead star called a pulsar, but its signal didn't match what they expected from those. Now, the strangest property of this new signal is it has a very high polarization. It means light oscillates in only one direction, and members of one direction, but that direction rotates with time.
It's a real band.
The brightness of the object varies dramatically by a factor of 100, and the signal switches on and off apparently at random. It says we've never seen anything like it. The radio signal named ASKAP J173608.2-321635 after its coordinates
I coach by faith.
Was unique. It started out invisible, then it turned bright, and then it faded away before reappearing again. They called the behavior extraordinary. The scientists detected 6 radio signals from the source over 9 months in 2020, tried to find the object in visual light, but they found nothing. They opted to use the radio telescope and failed to recognize the source. According to the press release, the signals don't fit any currently understood pattern of variable radio source. It could be a new class of stellar object. Or, as my theory is, it's Doug Buffone talking about line stunts. That when they decode it, that's what they get. Ed, we need line stunts. Another one of the scientists said the information that we do have has some parallels with an emerging class of mysterious objects known as galactic center radio transients, including one dubbed the Cosmic Burper.
You could argue that just described Rick Camp.
Right. Galactic Center Radio Transients, also known as Rick Camp. I'm trying to admit consistent signals.
We're looking to get him consistency here.
Yes. So scientists are looking out. They said they're going to keep the eye out for more clues. And they don't understand the sources. They just say this all adds to the mystery.
I think it's Fernwood tonight. Didn't they beam that into the universe a while back?
Everything's beamed into the universe. It's all out there.
I was thinking of Jim Boylan, but I like Rick Camp better.
He's transient. He's radio. But yeah, I think it's Fernwood tonight. Isn't that a thing? How do I know this?
I love that show.
Didn't they beam it out into space, though?
Like, actually? I mean, everything's
beamed into space. One of our listeners has to know this.
That they specifically sent it into
Fernwood
space?
Fernwood tonight, space.
Very underappreciated show.
No, I'm going to look into this because supposedly it was beamed into space. And another thing that I've been thinking about for a while now, because you got time when you're waiting for the White Sox game to end that's gone 4 hours and 45 minutes. If you were an alien and you were like good at, I don't know, traversing the universe, which clearly we are not, would you want to associate with us?
No.
Yeah,
I would eradicate
either.
Us immediately.
I wouldn't either. And here's the worst part at this point. What if we are it?
We can't be.
Doesn't that kind of suck?
Totally. We can't be.
If this is it?
No.
Speaking of like deep questions we have to ask ourselves, like analytic running game and you know, pitching management, we really have to ask ourselves, like, if we're it, this is not good.
No. And that is the Midday Midway.
That sounded like Fernwood tonight to me.
It's Scott and Davenport.
Next up, Hub Arkish on Bears and NFL, and he'll take phone calls too. So keep it here for more football talk on the score.
Your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.